Good morning, everybody. Welcome to IT Live, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors, Texas Homer, and next to me is Ian Boyd. It is the Wednesday show. So we are going to talk about the Texas defensive strategy coming into shape, what that means, what it'll look like, changes from last year. Are we going to get better at certain things? And what does this scheme allow us to do to maximize our player body types and our player talents? And also we'll look at, is the Texas pass rush going to be the main key to a championship? So we'll see that there later. But first, y'all need to join Inside Texas, $1 until August 30th for new members only up until Ohio State, one single dollar. Really fun day on the site yesterday. A lot going on. You guys would have enjoyed it. If you did miss out, you can catch up now. $1. Come sign up. Come hang out. And then Paul, as you guys know by now, dropped his 2025 Longhorn Football Prospectus, thanking Texas football. It's the best Texas preview on the market, SEC preview on the market. And then Paul does a good piece up front on the new NIL era. And then our own Eric Nalin also has done a part on recruiting. Go check it out. Funny, insightful writing, as always, from Paul. Hey, and what's up, dude? He somehow appears muted. There we go.
Almost successfully posted our stream to Twitter while muted. Because, yeah, otherwise it plays, you know?
Yeah.
I almost did it before you cut to me, but I didn't. I just barely missed it.
Tell the audience why you're so excited for the upcoming next few days.
I am home alone for a few days. Dude. The wife is taking all of the children with her to Houston,
yeah,
to see her parents celebrate nephew's birthday party, and I will be here
watching 1990s football games, ordering Domino's, man, just really living.
I just got this tip from Trey Elling that he said he got from Aaron Franklin at Franklin's Barbecue.
Yeah,
a really simple way to reverse sear a steak. And tomorrow I will do that.
It's game time.
That's the big plan for Thursday.
Irony is, like, if someone just took a picture, it looks very lonely, just a guy eating a nice steak. But if you took it, the internal monologue, it's ultimate peace. Just a guy by himself eating a nice steak.
It's 100% going to be Ron Swanson party.
Yeah.
With, like, the Lagavulin and the steak and the bridge on the River Kwai and nobody there.
Yeah. It's going to be nice. Just a little bit of peace, man, and quiet.
I have some wild turkey, though. I don't have Lagavulin.
I've only had it once, and it was actually quite nice. All right, so the first part we're going to hit is the defensive strategy coming into focus. Some of the quotes from SEC Media Days gave us some hints there, too, as well as some sourced reporting from Eric kind of over spring and fall on what we think we're going to see. First, we're going to start off with the multiple pass rush. We'll get a more in-depth in this on your next piece, but it's important to know how many different guys we have. So Sark stated that, hey, we have Trey Moore and Brad Spence. These are guys that can play on the edge and rush typically. They also can be linebackers, or they can drop from the edge. So that's an important piece in the chess game. Of course, you have Colin Simmons, who has the craziest fast step, can rush any quarterback, but also a player that can drop into space and fill those kind of zone under coverage roles. So that's important there. We have a lot of guys that can do a lot of things. And when you're able to do that, it opens up some of the scheme potential, particularly in a single high. So let's talk first, just quick overview of our personnel and why that matters.
Is that for me?
Yeah, no, it's for the chat. If the chat would just like to answer that.
Well, I have a lot of guys that can rush the passer, Connor.
I know, I kind of explained it and then said, please explain it.
I guess the big trick to add to what you're saying is that they have a lot of edges that can rush the passer and have been around long enough now where I think at least the top three and maybe all of them have learned how to drop and cover. From what we hear, they've worked a lot of cover three. And the reason you would do that is that you can get all your edges reps in, like, the hook drops and maybe the curl drops in cover three. Seam drops. if those four, the those four ones that are have the colored blocks underneath them, if you can teach all of your safeties and your linebackers and your edges, if those three groups, position groups, can all learn each one of those drops or most of those drops, then you can turn your defense into this like total football, positionless football, amorphous blob. Yep. Where you play the same cover three rules and the same structure defense on every play, but everyone trades roles and you just play around with the matchups.
So Ian makes a good point. So this is Cody Alexander from Match Quarters on his cover three series. If you notice above the red blocks, seam, strong hook, weak hook, seam, those are all X's, right? The other positions are named field corner, boundary corner, middle safety. So that's exactly what you're saying. You can mix and match this here. Right. So your strong safety could go down to the seam. Your strong safety can go to the weak hook, any of that kind of stuff. So you're playing an idea, not a specific player. So anyone, you learn seam, you learn strong hook, you learn weak hook, and you learn the other seam. And you can mix and match them. What's cool here, even what you could do theoretically, right? I could take this seam X guy, the one that has first and fourth under him, I could blitz him. And then drop that end on the right into that seam as well. So it gives you simulated pressures, these kind of things too. So you can even teach these ends on the line to switch positions so you could fire players that are traditionally in the four under coverage spots. So this is a ton of flexibility. And what's tough sometimes, if you don't come out of a too high shell, it doesn't mean too high coverage, but you'll start in a too high shell, one of the safeties will go down, one will go high. That's going to confuse quarterbacks. You see in the NFL all the time. It's in college now. That's confusing. But if you do start with just a single high, it's not as confusing for a quarterback, but it can become very confusing in the under coverage when you're dropping ends in different spots and each player can play a different role. So that's what's really cool about cover three is you teach the idea of these spots and you can mix and match whoever you want into there. Good morning, Justin Wells. He had fun on the Paul show yesterday. Paul says I'm a credentialist and an expert believer. So Paul has made my
calling you an MF-er.
He was just calling me a deep. Now I'm deep state homer.
Deep state homer is good.
Yeah. And so, but that was from yesterday. But that's what's cool about cover three and what'll be unique. And that's why it's important to mix with, well with our personnel. If you'll notice, just to explain it, a three up and a first and fourth player, these are the responsibilities and coverage. So at the weak hook, WH is saying three up. That means if number three, the yellow in this situation, runs vertical, the weak hook needs to carry him. So that could be like Leona LaFau would need to do that in coverage. It's not a good matchup, though. So there's variations where you can avoid this happening. Ian talks about it later in the article. What if you make number three Devontae Smith and not a tight end, right? So if you make it Devontae Smith, now you have a fast slot receiver on a weak hook, generally linebacker, and you're going to get torched. A weak hook can generally defend a tight end, but what if that's not a tight end? And then your seam guy here too is going to be first and fourth, meaning that the first to the flats, so if that two-weak running back goes out to the flats, he'll take him. Or the fourth receiver to come to that side. So if someone crosses the pattern, say that number three crosses on a shallow, then he'll have to look at that. So that's first and fourth player and a three up player, just so you guys know. But this is cover three responsibilities. Just know that it can be mix and matched. It can confuse quarterbacks, and we absolutely have the personnel to really maximize this.
Yeah, the main point was just that you want your edges, your linebackers, and your safeties to all be interchangeable parts. And Texas wanted to do that in year one, could not really do it, just did not have the edges. They didn't have the edges really to do anything in year one. It was awful. Year two, they basically were like, let's just do something else. Year three, still, let's just do something else. That worked pretty good in year two. And then last year is the first year they kind of went to this. And now, yeah, Justin Wales. They can also confuse live stream viewers, for sure it can.
Just know,
I think we'll see the full blown positionless football defensive style 2-4-5.
Yep.
The thing that we talked up when Pete Kwiatkowski came from Washington that we haven't seen really that much at Texas in how many years has this been?
Year five.
Four years. So we had never, like, last year's playoffs is probably we saw the most of this. This year will be a little bit different, but they got the guys for it. And the big thing that they have is they have some edges that know how to drop. Ethan Burke is surprisingly good at playing coverage. Maybe it's not so surprising because he was a lacrosse player and he's 6'6". But he moves well and he knows what he's doing. And Simmons could theoretically do anything. Is Eric Bird your puppet account?
Yes. Yeah. He also put Texas Homer's really handsome and a great guy. So that's really cool. This is my sock account.
And then the biggest thing they have is that they could play Simmons and Burke at either edge. So you have good pass rushers on either edge. You could both theoretically drop into coverage. They could play Anthony Hill and Trey Moore as the inside linebackers. Both of whom could play edge if they were if this were 2021 and Texas didn't have any edges. They might just play Trey Moore and Anthony Hill as the edges. If they had those guys on that team, I don't know if they would play inside linebacker. They might have, but they might have just been like, y'all got to play the edge. We don't have anybody who can do the things that you guys do. But in this defense, they're inside linebackers. And then they also have, you know, Jelani McDonald can blitz. Mm-hmm. Michael Taft is actually really good at timing the blitz. Jalen Gilbo is pretty good at blitzing if he holds on to his starting spot. So they just have – they can interchange all these different parts, which means that they can blitz you with good pass rushers from almost every single freaking position on the field. And they can do that and still play basic, plain Jane, super sound, cover three. Mm-hmm. That's what we're getting at, everybody. Is if you can play like this really sound, safe, normal defense, and at the same time blitz people from all over God's earth, then you can just create a lot of havoc.
Yeah, if y'all want to be confused, imagine this X seam to the left. Yes, Jelani McDonald. He fires now on a blitz. What'd you say?
That's from this shell. That's not the best, but
I'll show you what you can do. Fires. Well, you're going to have to scoot the coverage. So McDonald's fires, right? Strong hook takes seam, weak hook takes strong hook, seam. And then you would take the middle safety. And then when they're in there too high, you would make them strong. So you're able to fire Jelani and then rotate everyone over, still maintain your coverages. You're still 7 in coverage. Now you get a nickel blitz. So it's like the ability you can mix and match these guys really quick. You can rotate coverages. You can create a lot of different angles of attack. And that's why it's cool. But all you guys need to know in cover three is you have four deep underneath, or four underneath defenders, the guys in red, and you have three deep, right? The boundary corner, the middle safety, and the field corner. And then the interplay between the underneath coverage and the line is what will cause the confusion. Cool.
I like this Justin Wills comment. Jalen Gilbo is good at blitzing if they're not running a screen on the last play of the half. Yeah, you would have liked to have seen a little more awareness there on the screen to not try to chase down the quarterback, but instead maybe pull up and chase that screen.
Yes, a safety will always be in one of those four underneath things. So you'll have a high safety. And then generally your strong safety will always be in one of the four underneath coverages. So when you see the safeties too high up top, pre-snap, post-snap, you'll see one of the safeties go up and one go down. When you see the safety go down, he's filling one of these four underneath coverages. It also helps you with the run, right? Because you have more defenders near the box. So that's also a big advantage of single high coverage is you can keep them from running all over you.
Jackson Miles asks, is this what makes Jonah Williams valuable? Maybe. He's kind of just valuable because
his skill set is incredible. Competitive
and enormous and fast.
Yeah.
So this might be an awesome way to unleash him. This might be the ideal system for him. So I guess that's sort of yes, but also he's just a freak. So.
And you want him as the down safety, or do you want Taff as the down safety?
Well, you would need him to be interchangeable, right?
Stronger weak rotation. I'm just thinking Jonah can come down. He's big enough to play in the box, and then he's fast enough too. We'll see it later, like Makuba. He's fast enough too that if he doesn't have a responsibility, he can turn and get a in breaker or whatever. So he'd be cool here, but also he has range.
One of the two back end safety spots, I would think. Maybe linebacker. We'll see where his body goes. I haven't watched. He kind of reminds me of like a much bigger Brandon Jones. Where Brandon Jones was like insanely fast, but he was actually did his best work when he could play downhill and when he could play in the box. He in like year one where he was a starter, he played back a lot and just played cleanup. And it was like Brandon Jones fine did fine this year. And then the following year, they played him down in the box more, and it was like, oh, wait, this guy's like a star. He should be down there more often. And the guys like usually what they are most natural at in football will match what their body would suggest. Because if their body is naturally good at things, then they just take to it like a fish to water. But sometimes you get guys where their body would suggest they should go doesn't necessarily match what comes naturally to them. Like Brecken Hager, it sort of made sense when they've tried to move him to inside linebacker based on how he looks. But when you watch how he plays and what was natural for him, that was not it.
Brecken Hager, man, he was a fun player.
There's a couple guys like that with Orlando. Brandon Jones is kind of like that, where it was like, this guy looks like, he's so fast and rangy. He should be able to play on the back end and just clean up. It's like, well, he's also thick, and he just loves being around the action.
So there's a variation in the second part of the article where you talk about these adjustments. So you'll see that Makuba, let's say Taff is this high safety, this MS, middle safety, and then let's say that Makuba is down playing the seam. The right seam, the first and fourth player. Okay, so there's a variation to cover three where you can, if you're not getting work, meaning that there is no fourth receiver that comes across the formation or that back stays into pass protect, now you have a safety that's sitting there with no responsibility.
Here's another way to put it. The way there's an adjustment that Texas apparently had in their pocket last year that they did to Georgia, and it allowed Makuba to pick off Carson Beck early in the game.
Right.
Which is that normally, like what Connor was saying earlier, if that number three receiver, the yellow guy, if he's really fast and he runs a deep crossing route across the field, it's really hard in cover three because the middle safety has – the help underneath to cover that is linebackers. If the linebackers don't do a good job of dropping with that receiver, then the safety has to try to pick him up or else he's running wide open. But if the safety picks him up, then there's no one covering the deep routes by the outside receivers.
Yeah.
You want your deep safety to remain unconflicted on the back end. And against the set, if three crosses the field, that means that the linebackers have to take him. And that's just tough because, like Connor alluded to, if you're Sark and it's the national championship game and you get Devontae Smith on that spot running against some big white Midwestern dude from Ohio State, it's 6 points.
Yep.
If it's play action, it's even worse because the linebackers
get
sucked in on the run, and then they're like, oh crap, and then they have to drop back and try to cover that guy. So the adjustment, which is from Vic Fangio. I was reading about this from Coach Voss. Y'all should give him a follow on Twitter if you'd really like
to. I read that article. It was a good article.
Is that the way the coverage works is this three up player, the linebacker in cover three, would normally pick up the yellow number three receiver if he presented that threat. And the X seam first fourth player would cover the running back in red. And so you can struck me before where that's not that great. It's like you kind of want the linebacker on the running back and you want your safety on the guy that's good at running routes.
So there's you're going to see that Georgia's going to line up in this exact formation, except what they're going to do. You see that two-week running back is...
Well, let me finish explaining how it works real quick before you
I thought you were done.
No, I'm not. Like, oh, I'm just getting started. All right. Now, the only thing is that if that running back is not dangerous running to the right side of the formation, then you have the three-up player and the first fourth player switch assignments. So the linebacker chases that running back like it's man coverage, and the rightmost X, the same first fourth player, he's the one that tries to get deep and look for the deep crosser from the yellow circle. And it's like in basketball where you like just switch the screen. And that way you keep your big linebacker on the less dangerous running back, and you get your fast safety instead of being stuck in no man's land, not really helping on anything that helpful. He's the guy that bails back and takes away the dangerous deep crossing route that was going to compromise the deep safety. So we'll see exactly that in the clip that you play.
Okay, so they have the running back in 2 week in this formation. Georgia flips it. So they have trips, same exact receiver setup. The 2 week running back is actually on the side of the trip, so they overload it with quads. What you're going to notice is that this crosser is going to become the fourth receiver because he's going to go across the formation, and you're going to see Makuba immediately bite on it. So let's see here. I'm going to remove this first. Okay, cool. All right, so you see Makuba. Let's see if you can see. Yeah, you see my thing? This is Makuba here, and here's our underneath coverage, right? So this corner is going to take a deep third. This safety is going to take a deep third. This corner is going to take a deep third. This is going to be a seam player, strong hook, weak hook, backside seam. If you'll notice, there's no threat from anyone right now to come and occupy Makuba. So he has no work. Because of that, he's going to see a player come across the formation, becoming the new fourth receiver, and he's going to be able to run across the field and defend it. So that's how he gets that interception, and the quarterback's not expecting it. He goes off screen. You can't see him, but you'll see he bites in here for a second, seeing if it's a run. Then he immediately turns his back, leaves his seam to go match the receiver that's going to come here and cross. And it keeps you from having a wasted safety. There's a reason why Georgia goes into quads here. It's because they're trying to waste a good player doing nothing.
They also have the tight end run outside so that the fast slot can be the guy that runs that deep over. It's a very clever play design. I'm going to give Bobo a little credit. Yeah, you can see Makuba drops down. He's looking to defend the seam, and then it's like, oh, wait, this is not threatening. I know what I can do. Bails. And then Beck never dreamed that that was like, can you imagine? Like quarters started to come back alive. Quarters was in trouble in the early 2010s, and then quarters made a big comeback because teams figured out they could have the backside safety come over and poach these routes.
Yep.
So the quarterback would drop back. He'd see that the safety to the side he was looking at was compromised. He'd throw it, and then the other safety would come from outside his vision and pick him off. And that like wrecked so much of what was making spread offenses really good. This is almost even worse because in cover three, for that backside seam player to bail like a really good linebacker and end up in the window like this is rough.
It's basically, it feels like a quarters adjustment within cover three. So it's like, so that's what's cool because the big problem always with cover three was that any single high is, like Ian saying, a rogue crosser will either take the safety completely out of it, and now there's no one in the middle of the field, he's chasing a crosser, or the safety gets focused on something else and that crosser runs free. You guys know Sark loves crossers. There's a reason why, because it can break defenses. So this is basically a way to stop this. It's an adjustment to take away one of the biggest weaknesses of a single high defense.
And we watched like Clemson last year and Arizona State last year and Vanderbilt last year would play cover three on Texas, and they would do this with the backside corner, which also sort of works. So like the middle safety would take the cross, and then the backside corner would have to get over on the post. And that kind of worked, but that would not work against Arch Manning. Like, it worked against Quinn because he didn't throw the ball on the post on a very good line, and he didn't throw it with enough zip. He was always, like, just kind of touching it up there. You try that on Arch, he's going to torch you.
Well, didn't Taft say, too, that all of Makuba's picks came from whenever he was playing down?
Well, he said that. And then I went – that's why I found this one, and I watched all of his picks. And I wonder if he had a bunch of practice that have clouded Taft's mind, because this is the only one like this that I saw on film. He had a couple where he was underneath and he picked off passes, but the only one where he came across to catch a crosser was this one.
Okay, but they did come from when he was in underneath coverage, the down safety.
It was like 50-50.
Okay, because it's hard to get the pick as the high safety because you're capping the receiver. You're not in front of the receiver.
Tell that to Dylan Haynes.
Yeah, well, that's the quarterback has to overthrow, or yeah, you have to be super cocky and run in front of the receiver. And if you miss, that receiver scoring a touchdown if they catch it. So generally, it's your down safety that's going to have more opportunities for interceptions because they're the ones that can jump in front of a route versus a high safety that has to keep things in front of them. Quinn put too much air under his deep balls. I agree. Yeah. And that's a big problem. Before we keep going, though, guys, let's hear a word from our sponsor, Academy Sports and Outdoors.
All right. Who's ready?
I'm open.
All right. So that's cover three. That's how it mixes with our personnel as far as being able to disguise guys.
What's the other GIF under this one?
Let me see. This is, I think it's just your end zone view of it.
Oh, yeah.
So we can watch it this way, too.
It's actually, this one is pretty instructive.
Yep.
Anthony Hill was a decent position, but yeah. I think that throw was going to beat him. Carson Beck gets a bad rap. Carson Reck threaded the needle a ton last year. If they have the right pieces around him in Miami, I think he could surprise.
So this is also advantage two with our personnel. Anthony Hill and LaFau, athletic linebackers. Think of like a Tyler Atkinson who we just recruited, right? So there's
I think that's generous.
You don't think he's a good pass coverage linebacker?
I think Tyler Atkinson is a different level of fast than Anthony Hill and Leongo LaFau.
Yeah. I agree. But I'm saying whenever he comes into the scheme, he's going to be able to maximize any type of drops. So that's why it's important there.
He should. Theoretically, he should be like awesome at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Makuba's up here. I'm going to click the screen. This is Makuba comes down because he's worried about it weak side run action, right? Because if you look here, if they do run it weak side, Makuba's the force player, meaning he has to contain it. So he does bite, right? Is that because look at this B gap, right?
Yep.
So he does bite. He realizes it's not. He takes it. He turns around. He's called looking for work. You look for work. Something's almost always going to break inside in a trips formation. So you know it's coming. So he turns around, looks for work, and then he's able to go and rob the ball. Boom. It's also a sick pick because
Can you pause it where he touches the ball? Because I'm curious about the placement. It's just before that. So, yeah, Hill was beat. Beck had Hill beat. And he was about, if that guy caught that ball, that's big, big trouble. Like he might have.
It's Georgia, dude. It's Georgia. They don't catch. They dropped at literally everything.
The slot caught balls. The slot could catch.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he was that fast, but he could have potentially crossed up Taff in the open field. And it would have been up to like.
Right here. So if it gets through, he'll catch it. They're both in front of him. Taff's over here looking. So he catches it and runs up there.
Yeah. Probably somebody catches him, but that's it's a big play at the very least.
But it never was.
But it wasn't.
Because of Makuba. All right. Our personnel and edge and linebacker matter. Then we marry it with this cover three scheme. I think someone asks, do we think the coverage is going to be good enough for the pass rush to get home? Is that why Black may start over Gilbo? Saw Ian's article about this. Was just curious for more information.
Is this our segue?
It's a good segue. We might use it. I have one more question I want to hit. So it's not going to be the perfect segue, but close.
Okay. So to answer it, yes. The cover three is actually all modern coverage is pretty dynamite if you have two things. One, a back seven where everybody knows their job and communicates and plays with the right leverage. They don't all have to be that athletic or awesome. If they are, that's great. But if they just all know their jobs and the right leverage, then you can be really good. If two, your corners are awesome. There's only so much you can do to help your corners before you start overtaxing the safeties and the linebackers. But if your corners can play out there and like challenge routes up and down the route tree and not just be sieves, at least one of them, then now you're cooking with gas. And that's what I think separates the very best defenses. That and defensive tackle play. And so, you know, you don't have Jahdae Barron. Somebody needs to be that guy. And the other guy needs to be at least pretty good. And I would say there is optimism for believing you could believe maybe that any three of Texas's corners might be really good this year. You could definitely believe that two of them would end up being good, but not a one of them is a sure. We've not seen a single one of them be great yet. We've not seen a single one of them be championship caliber yet. Can you bring up this Justin? Oh, this is a good one. Okay, PK defense puts a lot of stress on that linebackers, it seems. It's a safety-friendly defense. Taff seems to be the freelance player to me. I don't know if I would say it's a lot of stress on the linebackers. The edges, maybe, you would say, if they have to learn to cover, then that's like an additional skill set that they have to master. For the linebackers, I would say it's actually a pretty friendly scheme. Like quarters often puts linebackers in more space than cover three does. You have thoughts on that?
I don't think it's crazy hard on a linebacker. I mean, really, they just have their cover three drop or whatever, and then their blitz package. but as far as Taff being a freelance player, it that all just depends on your rotation. If he's going to be able to move up top or be down in the box. There's plenty of times you see Taff down in the box too. So it's really just dependent, man. It's dependent on the offensive formation they're presented with, whether or not Taff gets to roam a little bit more.
Pull up this Justin Wales comment. This is one of my favorites because this allows me to make an extremely important point. Justin says, so just have elite corners and DTs along with really smart safeties seems simple enough.
Yeah.
College football is all about having elite athletes at the elite athlete positions and then guys that don't have to be elite athletes but are just smart and know what they're doing at other positions. And those positions are elite athlete positions, offensive tackle, defensive tackle, edge, cornerback, receiver. Positions where you just need tough, smart guys, safety, linebacker, quarterback, interior offensive line, tight end. Running back is sort of its own little thing. you absolutely don't need elite athletes at those interior spots, and you don't necessarily need smart ones on the outside. So, like, I think this is important because people get trapped into this where everybody wants the elite athlete at every single position. And that's what we're used to, is like Nick Saban just stockpiling elite athletes everywhere. And you don't need that. That's not how really the game works. That's not what optimizes in a team sport like this. And the proof is that Clemson beat Alabama twice, following more what I'm describing, where they had elite athletes where they needed them, but they had a lot of other guys that were like tough, bulked up, well-trained, three-star guys.
That's what scheme's for, right?
That's what scheme is for.
Yeah. All right, cool.
This is going to matter if we get to more and more of a salary cap era in college football.
Right. Who do you pay first? And it's going to be similar, not always one-to-one with the NFL, because NFL has some different.
And what do you pay for?
Value. But it's yeah, which positions are going to be prioritized on the roster. All right, Ian. Well, this leads us to the big question. And we hear this all the time. Texas pass rush is going to be crazy from end to linebacker play. Even
that's what we've just been saying. That's what we've just been pumping up.
Some of the nickel play, right? So can the 2025 Longhorns win the national championship with pass rush? Tell them yes, Ian. Tell them yes right now.
I wanted to. I was thinking about – I conceived of this article because I was like, man, this pass rush is going to be so nasty. And so my general rule is pass rush is kind of overrated in college football. It just doesn't matter enough of the time to where that's where you want to make your money. Like, you want, if you can have the dominant edge or the dominant defensive tackle in college football, you want the defensive tackle every time. Maybe in the NFL too, but I'm less studied on NFL dynamics, to be honest. I think the NFL is different in a few ways. I'll tell you though, college football. But then I was like, but man, has there ever been a team this nasty with this many dudes where it's just like, well, how do you even block these guys at all? So I was like, maybe this could be an exception. So the first thing I did when I was writing this article was I looked up which teams had the highest sack rate, highest sacks per game in the last like 15 years. And I went back as far back as I could get into the aughts with these like accumulated stat pages, like team stats. And what I found was that there were a bunch of teams, more teams than I thought, that had really nasty ensembles of pass rushers, kind of like this Texas team. And the ones that were like that were not consistently great, even at defense, much less like winning a championship. So then I was like, well, here's the way to do it. Instead of looking at total sacks, I should look at sack rate. Because if you have a really good pass rush, you may not get as many sacks because teams just don't even try. They just don't even try you, right? And then I looked up which team had the top FEI. It's an adjusted stat measure you can find online from Brian Fromo. Who was the number one defense in the country in FBI for the last 11 years of the playoff, which is the playoff era, starting in 2014? And then what was that team's sack rate and what kind of pass rushers did they have on the team? And so I think, yeah, the table gives the answer. Might zoom in a little bit on that.
Let's go back from 2014 and we'll go through it.
It's going to start with teams that are better at pass rush and then get less so.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. So let's see. Top D. Okay. So these are the top defenses and where they rate as a pass rush unit. So this pass rush unit, this is the top defense. 2014, Clemson was the top defense. They had the fifth best pass rush unit. Alabama was.
They had the fifth best sack rate.
Sack rate, which is what we're using as a proxy here.
Yeah.
And then you have Alabama was top with third. Alabama was fifth. Clemson was second. Then we get into where it gets a little bit more different. Clemson is now ninth. Northwestern was the top DFI. That's crazy. They were 115th in sack rate.
So that Northwestern team played seven games, and they played Ohio State super tough, and then they played like a bunch of games where it was like crappy Big Ten teams that had barely practiced. So they're not – it's a garbage. It's an anomaly. They didn't even play like a full season up there.
Go ahead. Georgia in 2021, they were 15th. Georgia in 2022, top defense, they were 58th in sack rate. Michigan, top defense, 13th in sack rate. Notre Dame in 2024, 28th in sack rate. So we do notice a pretty strong correlation kind of going back here, like 2019 back. But in the more recent years, we've seen that sack rate and top defense are not super correlated. Generally, you're going to have a higher sack rate if you're a better defense, but it's not that kind of one-to-one that we had earlier. And so why, well, you know, you say the pass rush doesn't matter as much. Initially, people are like, what are you talking about? Well, a couple reasons. Quarterback, they can get the – first off, your pass rush is really going to light you up on – certain downs. So it's already a situational tool. Second and long, third and long. Also, most of these college quarterbacks are not NFL quarterbacks, meaning that they're not going to be sitting back in the pocket looking for 15-yard digs like you see all the time in the NFL, right? Yeah. So the NFL agrees to play this game where they will give the edges more opportunity because it's worth it if they hit those deep stuff. But if you remember, most teams are throwing little dink and dunks, right? So there's no time. Also, if you're known for having a scary front, that's already game plan adjusted. The coaches are going to look at your players, and we might see this with Texas this year, and we're not going to play that game, right? We're going to take the Texas pass rush out of it. So we're not even going to be throwing long concepts. We're not going to let Colin Simmons have 3 seconds. It's a losing proposition. Yes. So there's also that reality too. So these are all the reasons why you can kind of neutralize the pass rush. And you remember with Sark, right? When they had Dallas Turner and Will Anderson, Sark was like, we're not going to let you get involved in this. If we are throwing deep, Quinn is basically spot throwing. 1-2, throw it up, worthy, go catch it like a punt. But we're not going to sit back there and survey the landscape and wait 3 or 4 seconds. So that's how you can neutralize a pass rush easier in college than you can in the NFL. That's the big difference.
Yep.
Oh, Ian's going to love this.
I was told yesterday
that a sack for defense is more important, helps your likelihood of winning more than an interception. So pass rush over coverage. We'll see if Ian likes this because it is counterintuitive and Ian's naturally counterintuitive. Okay, so Ian, what is more detrimental to an offense's chances of winning, throwing interceptions or sacks?
Throwing interceptions.
So statistically, it's not. So this is what I'm gonna love. Ian hates all things verifiable with numbers.
All right, go ahead.
This is for the NFL. They have to study it for college. But all the sports science and all that stuff, units at the teams have done research, and sacks are more detrimental to your overall EPA and chances of winning than interceptions, which is pretty wild. Now, I don't know if that's because of frequency. So, like, the worst quarterback in the NFL, he'll throw a pick 1 out of 25 times. Better quarterbacks are even longer than that, right? So interceptions don't appear as often in the game. Sacks, you can get sacked, like, 1 out of 10 dropbacks. So sacks are more frequent. But they found for your overall chances of winning that game, taking a sack – can be more detrimental than an interception. I knew Ian would like this one.
All right. I have a three-pronged rebuttal.
Go for it.
All right. Number one, NFL stats and college stats never take a stat that tells you what's true in the NFL and assume that it's true in college football. It's a different game. That's number one. So if this is based on NFL correlation,
yeah, it's based on NFL, yeah,
then it doesn't matter for college football, so just don't even. Second,
I disagree with that, but we can keep going on point two. It's very much the same game. There's a little bit of differences, but no, overall the major
factor explains to everybody how it's not the same game.
Well, yeah, they throw deeper digs, you know, and that kind of stuff, so the sacks are going to come more often. But to blanket say a stat in the NFL and the stat in college are never correlated is what my argument.
No, I'm saying if you have the stat for NFL, don't assume it's true for college.
Yeah.
Okay. Second, the types of interceptions are very different. Okay. The NFL guys don't throw the dinky underneath interceptions at the same rate that do a lot of damage. Okay. Yeah. It's just a different, they also throw the ball more in the NFL usually. Mm-hmm. So you just accept that there's going to be some arm punts and there's going to be some interceptions that come up. Also in the NFL, you have to throw to move the football. So the risk analysis is different. Okay. Finally, I need you to have that meme pulled up of the plane with the survivorship bias.
Yeah.
Like, here's where we need to armor the plane, because the planes that come back have bullet holes here, here, and here. Okay, well, the planes that had bullet holes where it actually mattered didn't come back. Right?
Right.
The way you play the game, and it's not the same. I promise you, if we looked at INT rate versus sack rate, I bet you we would see different results for these defenses. I started to look that up, and I didn't, and I will look it up. I'm going to look it up later today.
Yeah. Go check it out. There's a... Go read the articles on it, because it would be interesting. I want you to read their methodology, and then you could give us a good article on why it's not true.
It could be true in the NFL, but even in the NFL, it's a correlation. It's you're assuming the cause based on the symptoms. You know what I mean?
Yeah, their thing is
losing the possession of the football is worse than losing 7 yards.
Yeah, but what
that is that it that should, yeah. should have been my first point. So losing possession of the football is worse.
Yeah, that's the intuitive part, and that's what everyone thought. But their argument was it is true. But the point here that I think is adjusted for expected frequency of occurrence, that's interesting too, because my theory is that it would bias based on frequency.
I think what that stat is telling you.
If it's adjusted, then that's even more interesting why SAC ends up decreasing likelihood of wins.
I'll tell you why. Because if you're taking sacks in the NFL, it's not that the sack is worse than an interception. It means that you're getting beat.
Correct. I was going to say
by the pressure that you can't do anything.
Right.
Okay. So that is worse.
Yeah.
And it's in a quarterback. If you're just getting whipped, you're going to take the sack before you take the interception.
Yeah,
so you're getting whipped, and then this game you end up you don't throw. It's like, well, at least I didn't throw a bunch of interceptions, but I took a bunch of sacks. And then some nerd goes, "Well, that's because sacks are worse for like sacks make you lose." But
what it is,
that's not what it is.
So, but what you're saying, the stat for the sack is a proxy for your offensive line can't block.
Yeah,
and so that's a bigger structural problem. Then occasionally throwing an interception. Interception could be because you got beat on pressure or your quarterback just made a dumb read, right? But if you're consistently getting sacked in a game, that's structurally that defense is beating you.
I shouldn't be so snarky. I have no idea what takeaways the people that did the study actually had. Maybe they understood what I'm saying.
I'll send you articles on it. It's
interesting. I guarantee that some media that covered it did not understand what this was telling them. They did the plain thing. We got armor in the wings, sure. More armor on the wings.
But yeah, I do think the stat for a sack is a proxy just to say this defensive pass rush is killing your offensive line. And if your offensive line's not very good, then therefore should be the new intro. The funny part is Ian did the fake glasses push-up while he has actual glasses. So he's like these nerds that wear glasses as I push up my actual glasses.
If you just played that bit and you didn't tell anybody that, like, people would just think that I was being serious.
Well, the funniest part is people think that's Ian. People think that Ian is the stat, well, actually, like, nerdy guy, and he's actually the complete opposite. It's me and Paul that have to argue any type of numbers. Ian has an immediate adverse reaction to any type of, like, stuff that's in the nerd realm. It's the opposite of how people stereotype Ian.
I am a nerd, but I'm a contrarian.
Correct. Yeah, exactly.
So I'm always going against the other nerds.
Yeah, exactly. So people don't get it. They think like Ian loves analytics. Ian does not like analytics at all. But cool. Thank you, Justin.
Analytics trapped me in my house. Analytics trapped me in my house in Michigan for like 4 months and said my kids couldn't play outside on the playground.
Yeah.
That's what I always think.
Yeah. No, it wasn't, Justin. I was so glad you brought it up because I forgot to tell Ian that, and I knew immediately that would elicit a very strong reaction in him. So thank you for bringing that up. You gave us a good 10 minutes here. Before we keep going, guys, though, let's hear a word from David McClellan.
I'm just going to say, guys, you probably need a fiduciary financial advisor, and I've got the guy for you. His name is David McClellan with Forum Financial. He works broadly and deeply with his clients as a financial life coach. And he should know something about coaching because he won several national championships as a swimmer for the University of Texas. He specializes in financial planning and has contributed numerous articles to Kipling on the topic of retirement tax bombs. So contact David today to be your fiduciary financial planner and schedule a one-hour consultation to assess your financial situations. The free consultation is available, so just give him a call. The number is 312-933-8823. That's 312-933-8823. His email is also in the description below.
All right, guys. So did credentialism. Guys, yeah. Trust the experts.
Connor, right. You're not really a credentialist.
Not generally.
Yeah.
Because I'm still...
The show wouldn't exist if you were a credentialist. You'd
be correct. Like, correct. And I have and I've always had it since I was a child, like this gut rejection of authority. So it could be the teacher, the police, the government. It does not matter what it is. I do not like any bosses. I don't like any forms of authority.
That's the Appalachian in you.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's just automatically. So actually, I'm not a big credentialist, but I do like the work that the data scientists do because I've gotten some cool insights from it. And whenever you do get those counterintuitive nuggets, you know, that you can verify, man, you can employ them as real weapons on the field, right? Because coaches are generally not counterintuitive. They've been spouting the same like three sayings since the 40s about what football is. And so sometimes they can be real advantages for your team, you know, and if everyone's going left, 31 teams are going left and the 32nd team goes right. Sometimes those teams can win. So that's why I like trying to kind of sort through that stuff. Cause sometimes it just gives you an edge. I'm looking for ways to beat teams. Sometimes they give you that. So what do you learn?
I like stats. I you have to be very careful with them.
Yeah. They always have to be in context. You know, and you always have
first principles and then test it and see. You want to like make a hypothesis and then say, if this is true, what should the stat be? And then see if the stat measures that. And then, yeah.
Well, my big thing is like, so, you know, in the breakdowns before the games, I'll have, you know, my big list of stats and I just look at them at first as like, my process is this. I find four games for the upcoming opponent. I watch them, but I watch them lazily. I just watch them. I don't study them. Then I'll go and do stats, which are basically diagnostics, and you see that some are red and some are green. If I notice these trends, I'm like, stats here says this team throws a lot of interceptions and does this and does that. Then I'll go back, rewatch those four games again with an eye for it. So it's to me, it's like I'm taking my car to an auto body shop, and when I plug it in, it's giving me diagnostics. Hey, this is out. Hey, your EPS light is on. So that stats can point me in a slight direction of what I need to center my focus on. But sometimes it doesn't match. Like you'll see a PFF grade that's super low for a nose tackle because he has no tackles. He's not a good pass rusher. So his stats don't show up on the sheet. But then you look at the scheme and he's being asked to two gap. He's not being asked to tackle guys. And he's just a monster space eater, right? So that's where you would go, hey, this grade doesn't match the player because the player's not being asked to do what a traditional player would do. So you context 1,000% and game tape always has to accompany any type of your stats or diagnostics. So what did we learn from this list, Ian? What are the 4 points you have here?
So these are observations. These are potentially spurious stats, but I think some of them are pretty indicative. Zero teams finished first in sack rate. And all of the five most recent top defenses were outside the top 10 in sack rate. So at the very least, you can see that you don't have to be the best pass rushing team, at least measured by sack rate, in order to be the best defense. Now, I wish we had pressure rate. Somebody mentioned that in the comments on Inside Texas. They're like, well, what about pressure rate? What would pressure rate indicate? And I was like, that would be better. That would be better than sack rate. Nobody measures it. I'm going to get my brother to try to write an algorithm for me that will just like get stats and then let's like code and figure out. I want him to get me quarterback rushing yards with sack yardage removed. And because I can do it, but you have to go through all these box scores one by one.
Correct. You would have to go to the box scores, look at every single player's pressure for each game, total them, and then divide them by snaps per game.
But this is the kind of thing that we have AI now. If you can write the right code to tell AI to do the right thing, then it can process all this stupid, tedious work that I don't want to do and then give me the information I want that nobody else will collect for me.
Right.
So there may be big things coming if my brother can figure this out, which I think he probably can. Okay, second point, and maybe we'll find out that pressure rate super correlates to great defense, and I'll have to revise all my theories. Okay. Only 4 out of the last 11 teams had a single player with double-digit sacks. So I think this tells us two things. One is that the single dominant pass rusher is not the way. It's not the way in college football. It just doesn't correlate at all to what makes for championship defenses. Now, is it because you need a bunch of them? Maybe. That might be true. But just having that single, like Colin Simmons is probably going to be so much more valuable in the NFL than he ever is to Texas. Just got it. Accept that that's true. It's not exciting, but it's true. If he wins a national championship, nobody will care. Okay, next. On 5 occasions out of 11, the national championship team had the number one rated defense. This one, to me, I was kind of surprised. That is like people say defense wins championships, and I've kind of pushed back against that for years because I like Sark's Alabama won, and they were good at defense, but they were not great. And I watched Oklahoma win the Big 12 every year and a couple times almost threatened for the championship. LSU won the championship with offense. They had a good defense, but that offense was insane. But for the most part, the teams that are winning are the teams that are the best on defense.
And it goes to the playoffs too. Generally, the highest DFEI teams are in the playoffs.
And then also on 8 occasions out of 11, the number one rated defense played in the championship game. So there were 3 other times where the loser in the national championship game had the number one defense, which is also – that was very striking to me.
So if you want to bet, theoretically – if you want to bet on a national championship game, look at who has the highest DFEI in the matchup, and you'll be right more than you're wrong.
I thought that Michigan, when Michigan won in 2023, I was like, hey, this is the first year that the champion was like the team that could actually just dominate offenses. Every other year, the team has been like more offensive. I still think there was some truth to that, but it's not quite what I thought it was. Because those Georgia, like 21 and 22 Georgia, were really good at offense. Those Clemson teams that won were really freaking good at offense. Alabama was often really good at offense. But the defense thing was, you can't just like whistle past the graveyard on that.
Yeah.
So great defense, super duper important, maybe more important than Ian thought. Pass rush, not essential or not the crucial component. It's like the third most important variable, and you need to hit a certain threshold, but it's not like the biggest thing. Those are my takeaways. Maybe you could pick holes or somebody else could pick holes, but.
Thank you, Sugar Daddy. Not on a plane today, though. You've been jet set in the past week. Appreciate you, dude. Sugarcane Daddy, I didn't even notice he made the switch, man. Went from sugar to Splenda, now to sugarcane.
I think maybe because Trump's putting.
I was going to say, is he getting healthier now? Trump's
putting the sugar back in Coca-Cola or something. I don't know.
And the irony is that Mexican Coke has already came back into this. So we already have the ability, especially in Austin, dude. Mexican Coke was everywhere and it was wonderful, but it's not as widely distributed here.
It's like $5.
I know, like, which is annoying.
Yeah.
The glass bottles, too, I think are a factor. But
I want to hear Sugarcane rant about how the gringo has made it to where Mexican soda is super expensive.
$5 now. Topo Chico, fajita steak meat.
Can't get your Topo Chico or your Mexican Coke anymore. The gringo ruined it. Now it's an upscale habit.
I love Mexican Coke, though, man.
He's probably right about it, honestly. I think we are to blame.
So we just said, shucks, it looks like this great pass rush won't even be the reason for a championship, right?
Yeah.
But Ian finishes on a little bit of hope here. What if we're the rule breakers, and what if it does, Ian?
We're not.
Okay, cool. Well, come on, man.
I told you at the beginning, I looked up a bunch of other defenses to see if there were any other defenses that could compare to this one with just the volume of awesome dudes that could get after it. And I found more than I expected. I found a bunch of defense where I was like, oh yeah, that defense was sick. They had all kinds of dudes that could get after it. Even I think the best one I've ever seen at Texas was, there's like back-to-back 2008 and 2009. In 2008, they had Arakpo. They had Henry Melton off the other edge, but then they would like take him off or slide him inside to play Sergio Kendall. And they also had Lamar Houston at defensive tackle and Roy Miller. And that team was really good. And then the next year, it was Sam Acho had like 10 sacks. People don't even remember. Sergio Kendall was moving all over the place. He was getting after it. And Lamar Houston had a gazillion sacks at tackle. So those two, I think, were the best two pass rushes I'd seen at Texas until this one, maybe.
Do you think it's because passing downs are super situational? So meaning like if there's 70 defensive snaps in a game, only like 10 of those are going to be true passing downs. Second and 8 plus, third and 10. Do you think it's just the infrequency of the opportunity to land is why it ultimately doesn't matter as much as, say, a good run-stopping defense because they're running, 50% of their plays?
I think that plus shot plays. Like, often I don't know when this became the thing, but offenses having – I think this is more of a spread thing. Spread offense and shot plays, I think, correlated to some really nasty stuff in the last two decades, where teams were designing plays where the quarterback could get the ball out within 3 seconds and it not just be a quick pass, but it could be like a shot down the field.
Yeah.
Where they're scheming the primary guy open with alignment and concepts and stuff. Like, Sark is a master at this. And then Quinn drops back, and his first read is open, and it's not just a little under route. It's a freaking over. It's a post down the field. It's a fade.
And it's a spot throw, right? So he doesn't even need to wait. He's just throwing it instantly to a spot on the field opposed to having to actually wait for the receiver.
Yeah, he's like, checking the coverage is what we thought it was. This certain defender's not where he doesn't need to be, and then just letting it fly to the spot, and then your receiver runs under it.
Sorry, go ahead.
I think that is killer for college pass rush, because you just can't beat that with pass rush unless you're consistently winning with pressure in the quarterback's face. And that's hard to do, and you don't do it with edges because that's not where they line up.
Yeah, interior pass rush.
The edge is always – you watch any edge's highlight, and almost all of his big hits are going to be the quarterback drop back, looks, oh, that's not there, but I got this one, and then he goes back for number two, and then bam, from behind, he gets murdered by Lawrence Taylor, Sergio Kendall, whoever it is.
But also those shots now are paired with play action. So
yep.
The defensive line is now playing the run, right? So they're actually posting up for a second, thinking that they're expecting a running back to come to them because you play the pass and the run differently. So what you're doing is actually stalling an edge that's like, oh, wait, no, I need to hold the edge. No, wait, now I need to rush. So you're not even getting them at full speed. So even when you are seeing these passing downs and play actions type of stuff, they're pairing it with things that slow down the pass rush anyways.
Yep. And then you also have, like, your tight end and your running back in to help block.
Do you solve it with a bunch of stunts? Do you make your outside pass rush become your inside pass rush?
Those take time, too. They have to develop. You have to force the quarterback to hold the ball.
Yeah.
That's the only and that's why quarterbacks hold the ball in the NFL. Partly because the coverage is so good, and partly because they have more guys that can do that. And so they're trying to it's just how the game is played.
Yeah.
But so in the NFL, everybody desperately wants that dominant edge rusher. And they found out like the edge rusher was making a lot in the NFL, but recently there have been all these stats that are like this guy's actually you. If you want to win, you got to get this guy. Or maybe I'm a little bit dubious of that conclusion, actually. But they are super important. They have a lot of chances to impact the game. And in the end, in the college, it's just, you know, Will Anderson played as a 4-eye a lot of the time at Alabama. And I think this is partly why, is because he actually had more impact playing more interior than he would have if you're on the edge all the time.
So what's the key then, right? Say we have the most unholy pass rush the world's ever seen, and it doesn't give us, you know, the immediate effects we want. What parts of the defense then need to arise? You need defense. You need coverage, particularly at corner, right? Which Texas had in Barron, and then we had even good coverage with Makuba. But we'll often hear like a good pass rush helps the coverage. Do you think it's actually vice versa?
Yeah.
So I think
that's exactly backwards, right?
I think we have it backwards when we say that. That it's really that if Jahdae Barron locks down the number one, now the quarterback's having to process to 2 and 3, and now Colin Simmons hits you.
After the first read, then it flips to normal.
Right.
If the quarterback is capable of getting past his first read and resetting his feet and throwing an accurate ball to number two, now you need the all-world pass rush or you're going to get wrecked.
Yeah.
But for the first read, it's all about coverage. I have this thing called the rule of three for pass defense in college football, which is that it's a two-part deal. You need to be able – it's a three-part deal. One is that the quarterback, you need to be able to cover for 3 seconds. There's no pass rush that's ever been that can get to the quarterback consistently in under 3 seconds. Every once in a while, they miss a blitz. Your edge makes just an absolute Superman play. Your defensive tackle blows by somebody, and you get to the quarterback faster than that. But there's never been a defense that could consistently get to the quarterback in under 3 seconds. Second thing involving the number three, you need at least three guys in your secondary that can flip their hips and run with vertical routes. Two at corner, the normal way you would do it. And then either your nickel or one of your safeties, even if it's at depth, needs to be able to carry a vertical down the field. Or else it's going to be super easy for a spread offense to design a shot play where they've got a guy that's going to be asked to turn and run with a receiver and he can't, and you just get cooked for touchdowns until you find out how to stop it. Or number three, if you can rush the passer with three, then you can like bracket everybody with drop eight coverage. And then you don't need to be quite as good in the secondary.
And so that lends to you're a little bit nervous about the coverage this year, right? Upcoming. So that I think what Ian's saying is like, look, the pass rush is on a heater, but I'm still a little bit worried about corner in our coverage in that regard. You're losing Jahdae Barron. You're losing Makuba. These are incredible players, instinctive players. You saw what Makuba was able to do, robbing that inbreaker. And, of course, we know what a Thorpe guy can do. So, say you have the pass rush, but, you know, that
Who are the three guys in our prospective starting defense that can turn and run with a vertical against a good receiver? Doesn't have to be against Ohio State's best guy, right? That guy's going to cook anybody, and he'll have to help. But who are the three guys where it's like, if they're up against a average to good SEC receiver, they can turn their hips and run with them, and it won't be like 6 points whenever the offense wants it?
So not Taff.
Not Taff.
Not McDonald at nickel, even though he has faster corner abilities. If you're talking like pure man down in the box, foot race with a slot.
Maybe McDonald.
And over, and once it gets deep, I don't know. He's done some cool stuff underneath. And there was potential he could play corner. But I would just need to know his speed. Eric did say that Gilbo did hit 22 miles per hour.
I think Gilbo is one.
Yeah. And then Manny's not the fastest. Maybe he could technique it. Because we generally play him. We give him cushion to where they don't have to pure man up.
He needs to be a person like this year.
What about Derek Williams?
Maybe. I think McDonald.
That might be your three.
I think McDonald and Williams are maybes. But if you're in cover three, it has to be the nickel. It can't be the safety. That's right. Just not what a safety does in cover three. But the nickel does it a lot.
So that's the whole point of match three, is so you can man up the nickel.
Yep. So this has become maybe my biggest concern for this season.
How do you solve that? Do you think quarters would be a stronger thing, so we're always at leverage, maximum deep leverage?
Quarters would do it. That's obviously not what they're going to do, though.
I know that's that, but I think about that as quarters the better idea, actually.
In quarters, you have to solve for the problems that they had in 2023 with like four wide formations, and that's not going to be what they do. Like the solutions for that are not things that they're going to even want to do. The solutions for that are play lighter coverage guys at linebacker. And they're going like the opposite way. They're like, look, our edges and inside linebackers are going to be indistinguishable from one another, which is great. It's exciting, but that's a single high kind of thing. So, yeah. But it may be that McDonald can do it.
He might. I hope he's incredible.
So
I just want to know what he's like running 40 yards down the field.
Yeah.
You know, that's the difference. Like, I think he can do it underneath. He's twitchy. I mean, what a freak athlete. But I just don't know what that means if that's a slot and he's 40 yards downfield. That's where I'm like, I just don't know. Doesn't mean no or yes. It just means I don't know. Kobe Black's interesting, right? So Gilbo's faster than Kobe Black. He's at 22 miles per hour. Manny's not, and Manny's got the job. So it's going to be Kobe or Gilbo. But I would think Kobe's going to be, he's a bigger guy, but I don't know how much that means he can run. But once again, we kind of protect our corners with a good amount of padding too. And if it's cover three, they're purposely kind of working back and staying on top and capping those routes. It's just the rare times where they just run that fade and they match right up beside you. What happens?
Yeah. I'm a little worried about corner. I'm more worried about just, is there enough overall speed and coverage ability on the field to where they can. And I, as I've written this offseason, I don't know if we're going to see this being a problem until like the playoffs. It's like the teams that you really worry about doing this to you are not on this. It's like LSU could do this to you. They're not on the schedule. I think Auburn might have this capacity. They're not on the schedule.
Clemson
would just destroy you doing this for sure. They're not on the schedule. USC actually might be able to do it. They're not on the schedule. Ohio State might be able to do it, but they may not be able to do it in week one, if at all. So if Ohio State does that to Texas in week one and just torches them, then they're going to vault up my national championship contender list. Ohio State, that is. Obviously not Texas.
Yeah. Well, super positive. Great ending. It's the reality. And also, talk about the defensive tackle value here, too.
Yeah, all the teams that were number one in defense had amazing defensive tackles, NFL defensive tackles. And does Texas have that this year?
We don't know.
Maybe. They might. They might be okay. They might be okay in coverage. Like, Jelani McDonald might be a super freak. Might be like, I don't even know who a comp would be. It might be totally Malachi. He might be Malachi Starks, and then you're fine. Marad Watson might be an NFL guy, and you're fine. Cole Brevard could be leveled up a little bit better. Travis Shaw could be really good. But probably, I think probably they're going to be good, not great at defensive tackle, and good, not great in coverage. And it's going to hold them back, and the defense is not going to be quite as good as everyone thinks it is, even though the pass rush is nasty. And it's going to be obscured for much of the season, and then they're going to get USC or Clemson or something in the first or second round, and they're going to be getting lit up, and everybody's going to be like, what is going on?
Yeah, and like you said, also, we're not getting a ton of reps against it. You know, we're like going to be playing a bunch of 12 personnel teams and like that kind of stuff too. So it's not even like you're going to get a ton of work against these type of looks and offenses. So it's also a shock value of that as well.
Maybe in practice against Arch. That's another big question for this year. Yeah. So
cool.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Don't get too excited.
Yeah, don't get too excited, y'all. Ian does not like all the odds here. I still think it's going to be sick, guys. Just engage eight, Madden, whatever, dude. Leave receivers running wide open down the field. Who cares, dude? It also is going to matter on the quarterbacks you face, man. Some can really blossom under pressure, and then some completely fold, right? So if you can put that wilting pressure on those quarterbacks that can't process, sure. But, you know, Joe Burrow is not a good example because he's so elite. But you face like a Joe Burrow mentality and ability to face pressure. For instance, Arch is one of the best quarterbacks when blitzed in the SEC, right? So your idea, blitz is a proxy for pressure here. Some quarterbacks perform well with that heat on them. Some don't. So it's also quarterback dependent how much you want to try to mix this up. Uplifting is always in, for sure. All right, y'all. Thank you for hanging out. But you should also come hang out on the Inside Texas Forum. $1 until 8:30, Ohio State game. It'll get you through over a month for one single dollar. Best community, fun, smart. And then if you have any questions for Ian, you can ask him directly. Just tag him and tell him that sacks are far more valuable than interceptions. And we have Paul's book. You need to get it now. All the links are in the description. You can get the physical copy or the digital copy. If you're impatient like me and don't like Amazon and waiting for things to get to your house, just get it digitally. Just do that. Check it out. You guys will be smarter fans because of it. Chat, thank you guys so much. Ian, thank you as well. And this was brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Later, y'all.